and we're your hosts. I'm Diane Bortoletto.
And I'm Monique Chicardo.
Let's do it.
Hello, hello, and welcome to And Away We Go F1 Podcast, a Formula One podcast that goes beyond the track limits to talk about travel, food, and lifestyle surrounding the sport. I'm Diane Bortoletto, your pre-Drive to Survive Formula One fan, and today I'm back in Margaret River.
And I'm Monique Chicardo, your post-Drive to Survive Formula One fan, and today I am in Stavanger in the southwest of Norway.
Hi, Mon, good to see you on a non-race weekend, which is... You know,
devastating.
I was going to say pretty boring. Yeah, devastating for Formula One fans, but everyone in Australia will be glued to TV sets watching the AFL Grand Final, which is currently being played as we're recording. So
it's just not the
same. Between the Cats and the Lions?
It's not the same. It is I said this in the car yesterday to Espen, it is not the same. It's just such a shame when you have a weekend where there's no sport. And I was like, oh, the AFL Grand Final's on. But I was like, because there's no Formula One, I was like, there's no sport.
Yeah. Well, Formula One is the epicenter of our orbit, I guess, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. And but there is a bit of news and a few things to talk about, even on a non-race weekend.
Can I request that we start by sending our thoughts and lots of love to Lewis Hamilton and Roscoe.
Absolutely.
Poor Roscoe, poor Lewis.
As a dog owner, as a dog mum myself, I know the devastation. And the dogs are like family, and they really are.
So, yes, all our love to Roscoe and Lewis. Lighter news, lighter better news.
Let's segue from fashion for a second and talk about another driver that's recently done a fashion shoot.
Oh,
and that's Lando Norris.
Sorry.
I thought he looked absolutely smoking hot. I mean, I'm not a Lando Norris fan, but those photos were hoochie mama. He looked amazing in them. It was Ab City.
I can't deny that they did a wonderful job of setting up this photo shoot. It was for Vogue, wasn't it? British Vogue?
Yeah.
So I can't deny that they did a wonderful job setting it all up, but I just don't see Lando Norris in that way. It's like looking at my little brother trying to take a hot photo for his dating profile or something. That's just how I felt. It just did not feel right. So,
I mean, it was very James Dean, and I liked the look that they put. I mean, I didn't like every outfit that he was in. Mm-hmm. I don't think men should be walking around in crop jumpers, but it was very James Dean styling, and which really suited Lando's look. The photos were amazing, but I don't look at Lando and go, "You're a fashion icon." I don't see him.
Yeah.
Like that.
See, and it was just for me, I'm going to draw parallels here with, if everyone knows who Robert Irwin is, the late Steve Irwin's son, all of a sudden there was this Bonds campaign that he'd done in his jocks, in his underwear, and everyone was like, oh my God, and they didn't know where to look or what to do because it was like,
you see me.
He has a fantastic body and he looked great and he's so young and he's Steve Irwin's son and it just felt so wrong. And that is kind of how I felt about seeing Lando in these photos. I was like, had it have been like someone more my age, maybe like Fernando Alonso, then I might be like, oh, steaming hot.
We're near Fernando Alonso's age, are you?
Well, he's in his 40s.
That's former. And you're not. So.
Okay, so if it had been, who's in their 30s? Nico Hülkenberg. If it had been Nico Hülkenberg,
okay,
then I would have been like, yeah, all right. And you know, you look great, wonderful. But for me, seeing Lando, I don't know, I feel a bit funny about this one.
I mean, it's a good comparison with Robert Irwin because as Australians, we've watched Robert, or Bob, as he was called as a kid, grow up. So watching someone young all of a sudden show kind of sexual maturity, like that Bonds ad was kind of really shocking and surprised a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
in a kind of good way reading all the comments. But Lando, I guess, is a little the same because we've watched him kind of mature through Formula One over the last, I don't know, what, 6-7 years? So
yes, exactly. So then seeing that was a bit of a shock. Again, another good segue, but I just saw a clip on, I think it was the Red Flags podcast, where they speak with Gunther Steiner. And the question posed to Gunther was, if you were McLaren and you had Max Verstappen, who seemingly, you know, we've only had two races in a row where we've been like, oh, hello, his car seems to have really gelled with him. So if you were McLaren and you all of a sudden had this real threat of Max Verstappen behind you, would you call team orders and when would you call it? And it was really interesting to see Gunther, and he was like, now, I would be calling it now. If there's any threat, it's a threat. And you're going to look so stupid if you let that threat continue on. So it was interesting to hear from him about that.
It's a good point.
Isn't it?
Because I think Max is a real threat to Lando's second place position. Mm-hmm. It's possible he can still win the world championship, depending on, like, Max has to win every single race and sprint race, and the McLarens have to finish, you know, the mathematical formulation for it, but he has to basically win everything between now and the end of the season to win the world driver's title. So,
which is not something we haven't seen before, though.
No, it's not. It's not out of the realm of possibility. It is possible, but also with the McLarens' past performance this season, I would say probably unlikely that Max would win absolutely everything.
Yes.
But he could really, Lando should be worried.
Yeah.
Because when Max is on a charge, he's almost unstoppable. Mm-hmm. So Lando needs to be worried. And Oscar, I hate to say it, but if his head is out of the game, if he's rattled, we've seen some uncharacteristic mistakes from him.
Mm.
Yeah, he could also be jeopardizing his shot at World Drivers Championship as well.
Yeah, so, which is where this kind of comment about where and when and do you put in team orders, because it's getting to the pointy end now and it's not a slam dunk. There are all these possibilities that could kind of shake things up, and it's between your two team members are at the top. And as I was having a shower this morning, I was thinking about it and I was like, it's almost, it's getting ridiculous. I'm going to sound ridiculous saying this probably to a lot of people, but it's getting ridiculous that they won't call team orders, because it's almost like, well,
they do call team orders, but not to secure a driver's
championship.
They call team orders to keep everything fair.
Exactly.
The papaya rules.
Exactly. But then this is getting ridiculous because it's showing that they don't want to let Oscar win it. Like, that they'll let him win it if it's fair, if they can make it an even playing field and he happens to win, that's fine. But I think McLaren are too scared to not give Lando that chance. They're too scared to not give him that chance. In them calling team orders, they're not giving Lando that chance. Because if it was the other way around and Lando was sitting at the top and we're getting towards the pointy end,
they'd be protecting that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I reckon McLaren would do, they would be calling team orders, they'd be telling Oscar how to race, how to hold up the pack, how to protect Lando's win, essentially, like Lando's lead in the championship. It's a good point. Why aren't they doing that now?
Yeah.
They need to start doing that now and protect Oscar's lead.
Yeah. When he's got 24 points, 25 points, they need to start protecting that. Not when it's 2 points.
And there's no risk of McLaren losing the World Drivers' Championship at the moment. Like, the risk of that happening is so small, it's negligible.
Mm.
So, McLaren, come on.
Yeah. This clip that I was watching and listening to, I was like, you're so spot on, Gunther. Gunther was the team principal for a team that was just battling, always battling, you know, and if there was
half
exactly, and if there was any sniff of a better result or anything like that, you protect that. So it's interesting then to see McLaren being like, we don't want to tell Oscar it's not his this year. We don't want to tell Lando it's not his this year. They're trying to prevent that from happening in the way that they're behaving right now. So I just thought it would be an interesting thing to bring up.
Yeah, it is a really interesting point, and McLaren just need to start. I mean, they've got the constructors, they've got the money for next year for winning the Constructors' Championship and the title. They need to start protecting their number one driver mm-hmm. on the leaderboard.
We're literally getting to the pointy end.
Let's segue from Haas into some Haas news. And you've probably seen Romain Grosjean back in the Haas car, which was the car that nearly ended everything for him in that horrific crash in 2020, where he went into the barrier and the car pretty much got cut in half and then burst into flames. And you know that when the cameras stop showing the accident, you know it's really serious.
Yeah.
And that was, he sustained terrible burns to his hands, but amazingly survived. He was trapped in that car for I don't know, it was like a couple of minutes where his shoe actually melted from the flames onto the pedal and he couldn't get his leg out. He had to somehow rip his foot out of his shoe in a burning car. Horrific, like it's the stuff of nightmares for every single driver.
Mm.
So he took a break, healed, went and raced in IndyCar, and then he's back in a Formula One car for the first time in 5 years, back with Haas. They're doing a track day in Italy.
I was wondering what that was for, because I'd only seen it pop up briefly. I hadn't really read into it. I did see that he was wearing the helmet that his daughter designed for him, which he was supposed to wear for his very last race, but obviously his racing career got cut short with that incident. So that was very sweet. It was a really cute helmet too, with all these like childish drawings all over it. It was very cute. But I didn't realize that it was a track day. I was wondering what he was getting in the car for.
But speaking of helmets, let's go back to that epic Williams podium. And one thing we've completely neglected to talk about last week when Carlos got his third on the podium was the Sparkles unicorn sticker on his helmet.
So cute.
So cute. The Williams fan sent a video in saying, you know,
what should I call my unicorn?
Sparkles or sprinkles? And Carlos said, sparkles. And will you wear my unicorn on your helmet? And Carlos did and got third. I saw a meme actually of a Williams car saying, this is the Williams livery for Singapore. And it was just all the unicorn stickers all over the Formula One car.
I don't know if it's actually true or not, but there was like a photo of Carlos's garage in Vegas and it said Williams, Carlos and Sprinkles, and had a little thing of sprinkles on it. I've seen it around a fair bit that's what Vegas have done. They've put sprinkles on his garage, but I don't know if it's just people making fun of it, or I couldn't, again, I didn't look deeply enough into it to check if it was a fake or not. I just saw it pop up and I was like, oh, that's cute if it was.
Yeah, that is, I mean, really cute that firstly he'd put a unicorn sticker on his helmet to keep a young fan happy. Mm. And then, yes, it obviously was the good, well, maybe not just a good luck charm, because he did the work to get to where he is. But yeah.
You know the sticker's now on the trophy, right?
Yeah, I saw that too, yeah.
They've stuck sparkles on the third place trophy, and it is now sitting in the Williams headquarters. So Sparkles has a special place in history, as does that third position for all that, you know.
I wonder if Sparkles is going to be on Carlos's helmet for the rest of the season.
I'm sure we'll see on social media if that is the case.
Well, the other thing that we've seen on social media is F1 Academy. Mm. And they've done let's talk about our Australian driver.
Mm-hmm. Ava Agnostiadis. So she hasn't had the best season so far. Neither of our Australian girls have, but that's beside the point.
It is their first season in F1 Academy.
Yeah. And when you're comparing them to drivers like Dorian Pain, who just came out the gates charging in her first season and is doing so well this season, there's a big difference, and that's just going to happen. It's like comparing a rookie to Max Verstappen. So, so Ava, she was due to race in Singapore, but she's broken her foot. So, unfortunately, in Formula One, you kind of need your feet. So,
in racing, yeah. Mm. Yeah, you do. So, yeah, so Ava has had to withdraw from the Singapore Grand Prix while her foot heals, which was broken in a training incident.
And I wonder, I wonder if it will even be, because their last race is in Vegas, and, I mean, how long do you need moon boots on for these days?
As someone that's broken a bone in their foot, I would say, look, I think she'll be okay.
For the next race?
With the medical attendant, yeah. Mm. Yeah, I think she'll be okay for Vegas.
Watch this space.
Let's see, wait. Yeah, and F1 Academy on that theme have just announced a partnership with Japanese brand Hello Kitty,
mm-hmm.
which was a brand that's targeted to young girls, I suppose, but it's kind of made a bit of a retro comeback.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about it. To be honest, it seems really childish.
Hello Kitty now, it doesn't just appeal to young girls. It appeals to tweens, teenagers, that demographic as well. And then there's a few hardcore, long-term Hello Kitty fans that carry on through adulthood and late adulthood.
Yeah.
I suppose it's that tween, teen demographic, which is part of the fastest growing demographic that are following Formula One.
Yeah.
That F1 Academy is going for. I think the thing that F1 Academy are doing really well in regards to their sponsorship are challenging the norms, the old school, the kind of sponsors that have been involved in Formula One have always been,
cigarettes.
tobacco and alcohol, which they don't do that anymore. Tech and fuel, like Shell and companies like that. Big tech companies also involved in Formula One.
Mm-hmm.
But in F1 Academy, you've got brands like
Charlotte Tilbury,
yes. Like makeup brand Hello Kitty. I like it. I think it's good. It's just an evolution of the sport, and I can see maybe not Hello Kitty so much, but I could see potentially Charlotte Tilbury sponsoring a team like, let's say, Haas, that's got a female race engineer, the first female race engineer, like transcending F1 Academy and going into Formula One.
Yeah, and making it more lifestyle.
Yeah, I can see that happening.
I guess in Formula One we have a lot of lifestyle sponsors now, like Louis Vuitton is lifestyle, Tag Heuer is lifestyle, obviously top tier lifestyle, and that's where they want to keep it. Although we have Barilla, and Barilla is what everyone has in their pantry at home.
It's your supermarket everyday pasta for. Mm-hmm. I'm all for that. I think it's everyday people watch Formula One.
Yeah.
Like it's not.
At first I found that one jarring as well, but it's grown on me and I actually do quite appreciate it now. So I think maybe where my hesitation with the Hello Kitty comes from is that I just feel like it's an odd combination. Kind of like I saw that Formula One was doing a collaboration with Disney, was it? Or there was like some sort of merch that they were doing. I think it was either Disney or like Pokemon or something like that. And I was like, what? Why are we going down this road? And it just feels... That feels like a big money grab and a big, like, how do we commercialize this and make more money and get more people to buy things and make more money and get this in front of people and make more money. And obviously that's the point of sponsorship is money, but I feel like there is a limit. That this is coming from people in PR and marketing here. there's a limit to and a line as to where something like a collaboration makes sense and is appropriate. And where you're kind of like, why have they done that? And I feel like that's where the Hello Kitty is kind of leaning for me.
Like Snoop Dogg playing at the grand final.
Yeah, right.
And the pre-game entertainment, to me, that's like
right?
R&B rap kind of artist that sings about smoking weed all the time ahead of a AFL grand final game
and not
a big American cheerleading showcase.
Exactly.
I just don't understand it. I guess they're trying to widen perhaps their reach, get more eyeballs, like you said, eyeballs.
Eyeballs, money.
Audience. Yeah, eyeballs equals money.
This happens everywhere in Formula One. In countries where Formula One was having a slower uptake, you noticed the activities and the events and the entertainment around the actual Formula One was being pushed so hard, because that was kind of the key to bringing people in. So yeah, it's interesting. The collaborations can be great and the entertainment can be fantastic and so on point and so well chosen and work really well. And then other times you just feel like they're literally just doing it because they're like, people love this person. People love this brand. Doesn't really work with our brand, but you know, we'll get some benefit from that. So
yeah.
Yeah. But
yeah.
Yeah. Happens everywhere.
The other bit of news that I've just seen before jumping on was that from 2027, Barcelona and Spa are going to be rotating on the Formula One calendar. Ooh. So 1 year will be Spa, the next year it'll be Barcelona until 2031.
That's interesting, isn't it? I guess that's a good way to ensure that all these countries that are putting in and countries and tracks and that are putting in bids to hold races kind of get seen and are kept on the calendar. But it's also weird.
I wonder how it's going to work with the on-the-ground team, though. Like, having worked for an event promoter in the World Rally Championship, not Formula One, the knowledge loss that you're going to get from people who won't have a job after the race because it's not on again for another 2 years. You know, will it be the same team going to both races? Yeah.
Will it be a part-time team for 2 years, maybe, instead of a full-time team for 2 years?
I'm not sure how it's going to work. That's the call that I've seen. So
yeah,
there you go. Bit of news.
Interesting.
And the sprint races were also announced the other week, we haven't had a chance to chat about yet. There's still six sprint races on the calendar in 2026. So China remains on the calendar. So does Miami in May. Then it gets switched up a bit. So we've had Belgium on the calendar this year. And next year, we've got Canada as the third sprint race. Austin, the US, is the next sprint race. That's to come in October this year. Next year, we've got the British Grand Prix will host the sprint race. Austin.
I like that. Continue on, though. Just finish that off and I'll get to my thought.
And then, we've got Brazil this year in São Paulo and Qatar, both sprint races. Next year, we've got Zandvoort, which will be the final year that the Dutch Grand Prix is on the calendar. And then Singapore is hosting the last sprint race next year.
Interesting.
2026.
It's definitely, it's so changed up a lot, right?
I suppose it's pretty easy to just say, well, we're going to do a sprint race because all the infrastructure's in place, right? So it's not like they need to change a lot.
Yeah, I think.
Just the schedule.
It makes a whole lot more sense than like alternating racetracks year by year. I think that's really cool because it gives your audiences the chance to get to races or race weekends and have more racing action potentially at their home race, which is awesome. There is honestly nothing better than going to a sprint race weekend because there is so much action, especially if you've got like Formula 2 and 3, if you happen to get to one of those races. It's like going to the Australian Grand Prix, right? There is action all day on the track. It's great.
All 4 days on the track. Yeah. Like it's
nonstop.
All different categories of motorsport, F2, F3,
yeah.
Formula 1, V8 supercars, Porsche Carrera Cup.
Yep.
It's a bunch of other.
It's literally from like categories. 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. in the day, like in the morning. So it's, you know, there's so much to watch. And as much as the sprint races are kind of Stefano Domenicali's answer to getting more people to watch and getting more money, this money thing.
It's a reality. It's always been there and it always will be there. I saw that Liberty Media bought Formula One, I think it was in 2017. For $4 billion, and Formula One is now valued at $25
billion. Oh, that's all right, isn't it? Not a bad investment.
Isn't that? Pretty good investment, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Liberty Media, I don't know whether they're, I don't know if they're on a stock exchange, if they've got shareholders, but if you'd be pretty happy.
Yeah, just on the sprint race thing, I just think it's, you know, the format is amazing because you get the proper long 2 hour race. So you get a little bit more action because there's two qualifying sessions. You get that extra race in there. There's extra points on the cards. Like it is a great weekend. So aside from all that, like, oh, it makes more money and more people watch, it is a great thing to watch. So I like the fact that we have six sprint week. I would like more, but you know, whatever. Six is fine.
Yeah, I like the sprint weekend format as a fan as well. Why couldn't every race be a sprint? Why couldn't they just adopt it for every single race and then add an extra practice? And then just add an extra practice onto the schedule. So there's a two practices Friday morning and then sprint qualifying Friday afternoon. Like, why don't they do that?
We're not asking much of our drivers. We're really not.
Yeah.
Just put one practice in and then make the other practices qualifying.
They're there anyway. It's not like the drivers have to go somewhere new. Like, they're there anyway.
You know,
like, this is their job. I'll give you 60 million reasons why they can do one more session.
It's probably better for them because then they don't have to front media for that part. They're just like, oh, you know what? Sorry,
exactly.
I've got to be in the
shake
car.
Shake hands with sponsors, do all that. Exactly, yeah. I'm sure they would rather be in the car racing than they would doing all those off-track things, all those other commitments that they have to do these days.
Just ask Max.
Oh, he hates it, doesn't he?
Exactly. Oh, gosh.
There is seven races left on the calendar. So that means that there is 175 points that a driver could rack up if they won every single race. Plus, we've got points for the sprint races as well. So there's still a lot of points on the table.
Mm.
It's not a sewn-up championship by any stretch.
Exactly. When did Max win last year? He won three races from the end, four races from the end.
I can't actually remember. I think it was pretty close because Lando was nipping at his heels at one point.
Mm.
And then wasn't. Yeah.
Like, and then wasn't.
I feel like it was maybe three with three races left to go.
Yeah. So anyway, we shall see what unfolds for the rest of the season. Next week is Singapore. Yay. Oh, I love Singapore.
Oh, I can't tell you how much I wish I was going to Singapore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know a few people who've been, so yeah, 1 year, right? 1 year we'll all make it. But do you have any predictions for Singapore?
I want Oscar to win, so I'm going to put Oscar on the top step. Max second. Who does well in Singapore? I'm going to say Charles third. I think it was the same prediction I did for last week as well, but
yeah, nice.
For Baku.
Nice.
What about you?
I really want to see Oscar up there, obviously. A bit of redemption would be nice. So I'm going to say Oscar. I'm also going to say Max because I feel like he's on a charge. And then I'm going to put in, let's say, I think this is the same as what I said for Baku. I'm going to put George in there.
It is the same as what you said for Baku.
Mm. Yep. So yeah, I think that's what I'm going to go with.
Well,
that's that, hey? So if you guys liked what you listened to, what you watched, you can leave us a rating or a review, a comment on any of your favorite podcast listening apps or on YouTube if that's where you happen to be watching us. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and TikTok, or you can email us at andawaywego.f1podcast@gmail.com.
Thank you, Mon, and thank you for having us in your ears Singapore, until next week and until lights out.
It's lights out and away we go.
And Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto and Monique Chicato.
Let's do it.